Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, Serena Bellissimo is with me, the entertainment journalist, and Chris Wasser, the arts journalist and Sunday independent film critic. We have recommendations, I hope, of what to watch, big screen and small, for the week ahead. We'll start with big screen, will we? And the new Tron movie, Tron Ares.
Tron Ares. Who keeps asking for Tron films?
I don't know.
I mean, the first one.
Not me, not you, obviously. Not Serena, me, no. It's you, by the process of elimination.
It's definitely me. I can't wait to go see this.
Yeah,
cinema.
You love a Tron movie. You're always talking about them.
Exactly. Did the first one make big bucks?
The first one, it's considered more of a cult film. I think it did actually make a profit, but there was enough interest in it to make a bit of a franchise out of it. So, like, tie in comics and cartoons, arcade games, and even like amusement park rides.
And that's why.
And that's where they made the money. But Tron Legacy, which was out in 2010, again, like a small financial success. But it's not as if anyone else, other than the people involved in the making of this, are, you know, standing around going, "Give us another Tron film." Maybe Jeff Bridges, because, you know, he does stand to make a few million out of just a very small appearance. But this is an attempt to, you know, expand the Tron saga again. But it's even more underwhelming than the last one. And I think a big reason for that
That's a good.
Or the trailer, yeah, for free.
Even more underwhelming than the last one.
Yep, and I think a big reason for that is Jared Leto, who, you know, the man just doesn't really have the charisma to carry this sort of blockbuster. Terrible in Morbius, terrible in every other sort of, you know, $200 million, you know, tentpole film. And this one is kind of the same. Very quickly, it involves a future, or maybe even a very near future, where you have mega corporations competing for virtual dominance in the real world. And what that means is that all of these companies who are obsessed with AI, I don't know what that's like, they're all in a race to kind of bring the digital, you know, digital beings into our real world. So you have one company where Greta Lee, who's a terrific actor, brilliant in past lives, she is the nice CEO. She wants to use her brain for the good of the planet. And you have the bad CEO in the other corner, played by Evan Peters, who wants to create these digital super soldiers to sell to the army, you know, for conflict and all the rest of it.
Okay.
There are some good ideas in there, but unfortunately it steals from bigger, better sci-fi films like Terminator. You've got Jared Leto playing this dead-eye AI anti-hero. The music by Nine Inch Nails is fantastic, but it's such a shame that the visuals and the storytelling doesn't really match that. So you have a case where a film originally released 40 odd years ago was so ahead of its time. This one looks like it could have been made about 20 years ago.
Right, we're not going to Tron Ares, so starting with
a
recommendation.
Too long, Serena. Yeah, two hours.
I'm out. Right, Tron Ares is in cinemas from Friday?
It is in cinemas from Friday, yes.
All right, if you are interested. Victoria Beckham, though, this is on Netflix.
Now, did you watch the David Beckham documentary?
I did, yeah.
Did you love that one?
I wouldn't say I loved it. I watched it. I mildly enjoyed it.
Were you pleasantly surprised by how much you actually enjoyed it? Because going into that, you probably thought, this is probably something I wouldn't watch.
Yeah, I found it hard to, it's utterly inauthentic.
Do you think?
Oh, of course it is. It's completely inauthentic.
It's
fictional. Like, it's a completely fictional thing. Once you accept that you're watching a work of fiction,
yeah,
it was fine. Yeah.
Well, that was so loved worldwide. It actually won the Emmy for Outstanding Documentary and Non-Fiction Series at the 2024 Creative Arts Emmy Awards.
What was it up against?
Did you not like it?
No, I mean, it was okay. It passed the time, but
I think it was. Oh my God, you've got them all for the poster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should be writing the posters, the slugs.
I think what happened with the David Beckham one was we're not usually let into the Beckham world, right? So everyone was surprised that they sort of let their guard down. And did they give us everything? No, but they gave us something. So then they went, this is so popular. And as a result, people came to understand Victoria Beckham a little bit more. She wasn't just that sour face that you see when she poses for photos. So they went, we'll give her her own documentary series. It goes for 3 episodes. The episodes are called Who Does She Think She Is, Kill the Wag, and Show Day. So basically, it's about her, right, like the start of her life, but it is more, and you know, her Spice Girls days, but it's more about the building of Victoria Beckham, the brand. Yeah. As a result, it's good. Like, I'm not saying it's not good, but what I'm saying is it's not very intimate. With the Beckham documentary, you felt there was a bit more intimacy.
That wasn't that intimate either. I was just going to say, I mean, is it going to deal with Rebecca Luce?
Not at all. Didn't even touch on that.
Is it going to deal with the fact that, by all accounts, none of them talked to one of the children?
And it was, and I think the way they got away with it, because he kept watching it, and they did mention his name because they were talking about when he was younger and stuff.
Acknowledge
right?
he exists. So, like, at least they haven't got that right. That's still happening.
Exactly, and you're watching it because it is all about, you know, her big fashion empire, and, you know, will it? It's about to go bust. Like this one, this last show, she really has to do something, pull something out, or else she could lose her empire. And they were at that. Nicola and Brooklyn were at that.
Mm.
You only literally saw one quick shot. And that's because I was looking for it. I was going, are they going to show them? Are they going to show them? So that's not addressed. There are some personal things addressed. Like, if, especially in the first episode, like if you remember the way the media treated her, like she was constantly berated for the way she looked, what she weighed. She said that played a big part of her with her self-confidence, but also she admitted to having an eating disorder.
Mm.
But again, that was sort of just touched on and then they moved on. You've got the massive talking heads. Like, you've got David's in it, Victoria's in it, Donatella Versace appears, Eva Longoria, who's her best friend, Anna Wintour, Gigi Hadid appears as well. It's okay. It's not going to be what Beckham is. They kept going on about the fact, look, I am funny. See, I am funny. So they're trying to sell that type of thing. It's hard to look at this and sort of feel sorry for her when her business is going under because it comes from a place of privilege.
Is her business going under?
No, but for about 15 years, were operating in millions of dollars in debt.
Okay.
And no one else could actually afford to do that. Like, yes, she's tenacious. She's a hard worker. But that's not the only reason why her brand is so big. Her brand is so big because she could have, she could afford it with the investment of David.
She might have to join the Spice Girls again.
And that,
are they in it?
Actually, you'd think, see, because she's so trying to move away from that pop star thing, she didn't include, I didn't even think about it until you said it, she didn't include anyone from the Spice Girls. And I think that would have been great to give us a bit more insight.
I don't trust anybody who gets new best friends when they're famous.
And
Eva Longoria did not grow up on the same street as Victoria Beckham.
No, you're right. But
it's that's funny. A red flag for me.
They must have been
red flag,
right? Because they explained how they became best friends.
Yeah.
Like they were both
explaining you're losing.
That's kind of one of the things I liked about the Robbie Williams documentary, and there were very few things to like about that documentary. But
amazing.
It was a very expensive therapy session for Robbie, and full marks to Robbie for
put
doing that
on the poster as well. Chris is on a roll.
Fair play to him, but we don't need to watch that. I liked the fact that every now and then you had these guys talking about just being his mates. Yeah. It's like, who are these? These are just his friends. It's not like that. It's nobody in the music industry. It's just his mates. Yeah. And I quite like that.
Well, look, this is from the same director of Michelle Obama's Becoming, Nadia Hallgren. Will this get awards and stuff? Nah. Is it? If you're interested to find out how her fashion empire works, it's worth a watch.
What is then? So that's on Netflix.
That's on Netflix now, all three episodes.
A Want in Her. What's that?
A Want in Her. A very, very different film from Tron Airy. So this is made by an Irish visual artist and first time documentary maker named Myrid Carton, who has made a bit of a name for herself in London with her practice, with her artwork and her installations and all the rest of it. But this has been a film that she's been working on for the best part of maybe 5-6 years. And it's sort of a hybrid documentary, or maybe at times like an audio visual essay. It's been quite acclaimed and has played been very successful at quite a few film festivals. But basically, it tells the story of a tragic family history, her tragic family history, where she's in London one day and is called home to, you know, help find her missing mother, Nuala, who is an alcoholic, has been living with alcoholism for decades. And Myrid is sort of used to her mom going missing. Sometimes it's for a day or two, sometimes it's actually more. And at the beginning of this film, she's been missing for 8 days. So she receives a call from her uncle Kevin, who Nuala lives with. And they either go looking for her, you know, they're based in she's originally based in Donegal. They either go looking for her maybe in Belfast, or they just wait for the phone to ring, because sometimes the guards do ring and say, you know, we've found Nuala. So it sort of tells Nuala's story, how she got from being this, you know, very intelligent, very hardworking social worker in Donegal to, you know, sitting on a park bench in the middle of the afternoon and her daughter filming her and wondering, what am I supposed to do here? So it tells her story. It tells her brother Kevin's story, because he sort of has, you know, I don't want to say burden, but that's what it becomes from, of having to look after her and wondering, you know, when exactly do I cut ties here? She needs to help herself. And it also tells the story, you think that would be complicated enough, while filming this, another brother arrived unannounced and started sleeping in this dilapidated mobile home at the back of Kevin's house. So this artist and filmmaker, Myra, she certainly has her hands full here, but she doesn't tell a straightforward story. Instead, it's very much in that sort of audio visual. It's almost like a little bit of an installation piece itself. So it can get a little bit muddled. I did have some questions about the ethics of, you know, kind of maybe sometimes recording people who don't want to be recorded. There are a couple of times where, you know, she is asked to turn the camera off and you're thinking, how many times where you were asked to turn it off are we not seeing? But it is quite brave. It is honest, quite truthful, very moving at times. I admired this film more than I enjoyed it, basically, but I would love to see what Myra Carton actually does next. If she can make a film this moving about her family, I'd love to see her actually do something else.
Where can people go and see that?
It's going to be in cinemas nationwide this weekend.
Nationwide? Yes. All right. Okay. From Friday. It is called A Want in Her. John Candy, I Like Me.
Oh, Ciarán, this is the most beautiful documentary I've seen.
It's on Prime.
It's on Prime Video, available tomorrow. You know how I feel about anything that goes up in over 90 minutes? This went for an hour and 50 and I did not want it to end. It basically, it does what it says on the tin. It has a look back on John Candy's life. He came up at a time of, he was one of the big Canadian stars, like alongside Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Martin Short. They're all included as talking heads. You've got Mel Brooks and Dan Aykroyd, but the one that stood out for me, well, and you have his family too, sorry, you have his wife and his two kids. Macaulay Culkin appears in this.
Oh, yeah, Uncle Buck.
And he was also in Home Alone. Didn't share a scene with Macaulay, though. But he appears in this as well.
Oh, sorry, yeah, had to drive them home.
Yeah. But this is called I Like Me because there's a scene in Trains, Planes and Automobiles.
Oh, yeah.
Where Steve Martin's character is giving out to John Candy's character and you know, making fun of him, basically. Yeah. And he turns around and does this big monologue and just goes, but do you know what? I like me. And Bill Murray comes out at the start of this going, oh, all I can say is that everyone loved him. I hope the aim of this documentary is to show that he was a bad person. And he wasn't. He was such a gorgeous person. I love, this is directed by Colin Hanks. Tom Hanks also appears in this because they appeared in Splash together. I love, so what they do is there's, it starts at his funeral and with a eulogy. And then it ends at his funeral and a eulogy. And so it starts at 1994 when he died at only 43.
Is that all he was?
He was 43. His dad died at 35 on his fifth birthday.
Wow.
So that's something that he carried with him always. But then what it does is it then goes back in time to 1950 when he was born and tells you about that. And then it goes back, resets the clock and you go to 1994 and then you go back to the previous chapter. But I love the way it did it because as it's getting closer to the 90s, I could feel myself on edge going, I don't want this to end. I don't want it to get to 1994. I don't want him to die. And at the very end, I was ugly crying, so much so that my husband came down from a work meeting and just looked at me and went, is everything okay? John Candy's dead. It's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful documentary. Even though it's really sad, it's a hopeful one. And it's just like, do you know what? You watch it and go, if the world had more John Candys in it, this world would actually be a better place. And it's not saccharine. And I know they're only talking to the people who know and love him. So I'm sure there's another side. But it's just, it's beautiful. Give this a watch. Prime tomorrow.
Okay. From tomorrow on Amazon Prime. How are you? It's Alan Partridge.
Yeah. It's like the 11th or 12th Alan Partridge series. And I think at this stage, you think you've seen Alan do everything. I mean, he's, you know, hosted his own daytime television show. He's had his own radio show. He saved North Norfolk Digital from, you know, hijackers alongside Colin Meaney at one point. Yeah, he's done everything. But I think the best thing about the Alan Partridge character is that every now and then Steve Coogan says, that's enough of that. And he parks it and he goes off and he becomes a serious dramatic actor. Or, you know, he might play, you know, Jimmy Savile in a 4-part BBC series. Or he might play, you know, as we'll see very shortly, you know, Mick McCarthy in Saipan.
Yeah.
And then he kind of comes back re-energized, teams up with the Gibbons brothers, Neil and Rob, and they make a new Alan Partridge series. And at this point, part of, you know, the Alan Partridge story, the jokes shouldn't be this funny. The energy in the room should start to sag a little bit, but it isn't. And they're doing something genuinely new with Alan Partridge here. So the story is that you saw him in the last series 4 years ago, just basically his daytime television presenting career imploding
in
spectacular fashion. So he loses the gig. He loses his partnership with Tim Key. Simon, Tim Key is just everywhere at the minute and I'm all for it. And we see at the beginning of this series that, you know, it kind of, it had an impact on his career. He disappeared to Saudi Arabia for a while to try and promote camel's milk, which, you know, is a real thing. He comes back to Norfolk to kind of, you know, do voiceovers for tacky pub meal deals. But somewhere along the way, kind of lending his voice to all of these different companies and hosting all of these, you know, useless, trivial gigs, he collapses. And he thinks to himself, why did I collapse? There has to be a reason why I collapsed. And he says to himself that, oh, well, there is more mental health these days. Maybe I have a mental health issue. Maybe I will become the first person ever to host a documentary about mental health. This is what he thinks.
Okay.
So he takes his own money. He takes his long-suffering assistant. He sacrifices his relationship with, you know, his partner, played brilliantly by Catherine Kelly, but there's not much of a relationship there. And he goes off on the road to interview as many people as he can, or whoever he can, to talk about Britain's mental health crisis, or specifically Alan Partridge's mental health crisis. It is very funny. It is awkward as hell, but it still, it has that thing. Look, a decision was made a very long time ago that Alan Partridge wouldn't survive as a parody. So the Gibbons brothers, alongside Steve Coogan, decided to make him a person. And in doing that, they actually turned what could have been just a awkward, bumbling idiot into something that's a little bit endearing. So yeah, it doesn't matter what he says, it doesn't matter how many times he offends you, and he offends everybody in the room, you're still, there's still always a small part of you rooting for him. And I love this series. It's a six-parter. It's on every Friday. Best enjoyed, I think, every week on BBC Two.
BBC Two, every Friday. Alan Partridge is back. How are you? It's Alan. Faithless is back on Virgin Media as well.
This is written by Baz Ashmawi. He plays an Irish-Egyptian dad who last season he suddenly lost his wife. And his life is just like, how am I going to get on with it? Not only is he looking after his three kids, he also has his dad and his deadbeat brother and his brother-in-law that he has to sort of look after as well. I love everything about this series. I love that we are seeing diversity in Irish life. It's just a commentary on Irish life. And I love everything about Baz Ashmawi, his Egyptian family. I have to say, it sort of reminds me of my Greek-Italian family as well. And I just think it's a lot of fun. It's on Wednesdays, 9 o'clock, half an hour. I think it's only six episodes. I've only seen the first, but I've loved what I have seen. And this week, this year, joining him is Jamie Lee O'Donnell from Derry Girls.
Oh, yes. Girls. Yeah. She's a teacher, is she?
No, this. She plays...
producer, isn't it?
A producer.
Yeah.
Oh, is that it? Okay. Yeah. All right, okay.
Yeah, it has a big heart, doesn't it?
I love it.
Yeah, it's nice.
And isn't it great to see on Irish TV that Irish life can mean so many different things to so many different people? It's not just one way of seeing Irish life. And I love it. And, you know, I think when you're growing up, I suppose when I was growing up in Australia, I never saw my life represented on screen. So I love that you now look and go, I can see myself on screen, which is lovely.
So
but
it's
more
on
than just that, though.
Virgin Media One Wednesdays, 9 o'clock. Wayward, what's this?
Wayward, you have Mae Martin creating, writing, and also starring in their own series. And it is about a cop who moves from Detroit, that's Mae Martin's character Alex, to the idyllic town of Tall Pines. And together with their wife, they're kind of thinking this is going to be a fresh start, because you know that something maybe happened on the job in Detroit. But unfortunately, on Alex's first day, they encounter a runaway teen who's running away from this academy, which is sort of a therapeutic boarding school where rich parents send their kids when they're not behaving the way they want them to. So their investigation into this case coincides with a couple of teenagers originally from Vermont who are actually going to end up in this academy. And it's also, and this academy is run by a woman named Evelyn Wade, played by the brilliant Toni Collette, who just dials up the sinister rate to 11 here. Big Twin Peaks vibes. I mean, you're talking about a cop investigating, you know, missing teenagers in a town where everything looks perfect, but if you just scratch a little, you know, you'll discover it's
not. There's a dark underbelly.
There really is. Yeah, I mean, at one stage, I think Mae Martin was actually going to call this Tall Pines, and I think maybe at some point someone said, maybe don't do that. So I hope that they'll welcome the comparisons. It's pretty good. There's also kind of major Stephen King vibes in there. I like this a lot. Mae Martin is a performer. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't like it?
I thought this could have been like a 90-minute movie. I didn't need to be eight episodes long. It's too long.
Oh, no.
It's good in parts. This is, didn't like one and two, really loved three and four. By five and six, I was like, can we get it over now?
Okay.
It's too long.
I liked it.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that. Maybe I think it was because I was expecting, because I'm just used to Mae Martin's comedy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I didn't know you had this in you, Mae Martin. Keep it going, please. And also Toni Collette.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's in her big, weird horror thriller phase at the minute. And again, I'm all here for it.
Where can people watch that?
Netflix. All episodes now streaming.
It's on Netflix. Chris Wasser, arts journalist, Sunday Independent Film Critic, Serena Bellissimo, entertainment journalist. Thank you both very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.